Welcome to the first episode of Auctionable Offense, the podcast about auction drafts and fantasy football. My name is Zach Bonner. You can find me on Twitter at BonnerFett. I'm here with my co-host, Charlie Parker. Charlie, what's going on, man?
Hey, Zach. How you doing tonight, bud?
Man, I'm doing great. How are you? Little bit about myself. I am a former writer, now more of a beer seller and connoisseur. If you know me, it's from either Draft Hub, NFL Draft 101, or DLF. I wrote there for several years. I am the rookie pick trade value chart guy, the guy who complains about it on Twitter every once in a while. So, Charlie, tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
You can find me on Twitter at CoolHandsCP3. I'm just a good Canadian fella that fell in love with Dynasty Fantasy Football probably about 6-7 years ago now and haven't looked back since.
Awesome, man. What part of Canada are you from?
Born and raised Alberta. So for nice. Those in the States that might not know where that is, we're basically right on top of Montana. And it's we got a vast chunk of land here, so we have mountains, we got prairies, we got a little bit of everything. It's and a lot of snow.
Yeah, actually, so I live in Indiana. We have had freezing weather until 2 days ago. It's been off and on, but for where we are, it's been unprecedented. Actually, where I work, I run a tap room, a couple tap rooms for a brewery, and I bring in some sodas and things like that, and my distributor has not been able to ship for the last, well, through the entire winter, because it costs like 3 to 4 times more money to ship with a climate-controlled trailer. So they're like out of stuff. I got an order in today, and it was missing some things just because they're completely out. Like, this weather has been ridiculous. I don't know how it's been up there where you are, but I'm over it and ready for real spring.
Yeah, well, one of the crazy things about the weather where I'm at is we get what's called a Chinook wind, if you've ever heard of that. So what it is, it's a really warm wind. And it's a good thing, but it's a blessing and it's a curse in that you get very drastic shifts in the weather, in the temperatures. I actually was working one time, and it was a January day. It was minus 25 at noon. This is Celsius up here in Canada. So minus 25 Celsius at noon. We had a Chinook wind roll in that day, and the next day at noon, it was 25 degrees plus. So there's a 50-degree change in a 24-hour period. It set a record. So, you know, that melts a lot of snow, and you get a nice sunny day, but then what happens is that Chinook only lasts for a day or so, and then the temperature comes back down or goes back to normal. So all that melting that nice day did now turns into ice and creates ice. So Chinooks are great.
Yeah, that kind of sounds like how Indiana weather can be sometimes.
It's like a pressure change thing in their head and whatnot. So
it can go from some people get headaches, beautiful to terrible, back to beautiful. Just it's insane. And there are many times that I just really want to move, but this is where home is, and as much as I hate it, I love it.
We're actually a lot more fortunate. Another place, the next city just north of us, Edmonton, if you're a hockey fan, you've heard of Edmonton. They don't get Chinooks up there just where they are, and they're only 3 hours away from us, but they've actually been freezing below 0 Celsius for 166 days straight, and this was like last week or something. So I mean, 2/3 of the year and they're below 0. It sucks. It really does.
That's awful. But I guess that's what happens when you name your sports team the Oilers.
Yeah, they're not well liked. I'm not an Oilers fan.
You know, I gotta be honest, I do not have a hockey team that I follow. I love watching the sport, but I'm probably just a U.S. thing. I'm not quite close enough to Chicago to have really caught on and become a Blackhawks fan. And also not close enough to Detroit to have been a Red Wings fan back in the 90s when they were awesome. It's just one of those sports where, like, if there's a game on, I'm going to watch it because, I mean, these dudes just destroy one another. And the amount of skill that it takes for that game, like, I really respect it. I'd love to catch on. But, I mean, I think we both know a guy from some leagues we're in that is probably a big hockey fan. Cap, our friend, he's into every fantasy sport out there. I bet he's probably in 20 fantasy hockey leagues.
The Raging Cajun. Yeah, I used to be a lot more into hockey, as everybody in Canada is. But what happened was, as my love for fantasy football grew, and my fantasy season essentially started getting longer and longer and longer, I started missing more and more and more of the hockey season. And it, honestly, it just got hard to jump into the season in January and start really caring or catching up on what moves had happened, what injuries had happened, the whole dynamic of the season so far. And it got harder and harder, and then next thing I know, well, I'm not into that anymore, but now I'm getting more into rookie talk. I'm getting more into the combine, so my January and my February are taken care of. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, the hockey season is damn long. Like, they've still got another month and a half to play out of the playoffs. So you can catch some nice playoff games and kind of get your hockey fill, but with all my fantasy stuff, I don't have time for hockey. I can't even fathom how those guys do multiple dynasty fantasy leagues and sports and stuff. I tried a hockey league and it's intense. It's a lot to it.
Yeah, I think I played fantasy hockey 1 year. It was just a redraft and I didn't know what I was doing. I really just kind of followed box scores and I don't remember how well I did. Probably not very, but yeah, it's a different beast. Same thing with fantasy baseball for me, and I'm sure basketball is the same. Those sports where you're playing multiple games in 1 week, that's just tough to keep up with. But yeah, hey, let's go ahead and get into what this podcast is about. So this is episode one, so we're probably going to keep it pretty short here, but we want to kind of explain a little bit of what we're all about. So, Charlie, for you, what is this podcast going to be?
Well, for me, we're going to be an auction-centric podcast. Everything's going to be fantasy football. All the players, all the trades, all the action, you name it. But we're always going to have a little bit of an auction mentality behind the decisions, behind how we think of things. Now, of course, that doesn't translate across the board. You know, I mean, when we're talking trades and it's a 12-man league, well, who cares if you did an auction startup? But it has no bearing or relevance on the trade we're talking about. We will always delve into certain aspects. You know, when we're talking about a player, we'll talk about how you might look at them in the auction or how you might target them or strategies you'll use to get them at the best value.
Exactly. Yeah, so we play in several leagues together, and a couple of the leagues, actually all of the leagues, we do an auction startup, auction rookies. We have restricted free agency, that's an auction. Unrestricted free agency, they include IDPs. And this is kind of the stuff that we really love to talk about. So that's what we're going to cover on here. We also play in Devi leagues, which can be a completely different beast, especially when you factor in auction type drafts. So we're going to cover all of that here. We're going to throw in some stuff about some varied league formats. You know, we mentioned Devi and IDP, but also just different starting requirements, some different scoring formats, some commissioner info, because we both know that for your league to really be good, you have to have a commissioner that is committed, lets everyone know the rules the way they are, and has good communication skills, and also makes things fun. And that's kind of the big thing that I feel like a lot of us miss out on in fantasy football these days with, you know, big pots and big payouts. And as huge as the industry has gotten, we all started this thing because it's fun. And if it doesn't stay fun, then, well, fuck it. Let's not even do it.
Well, the truth is I in no way play fantasy football for the money. I just don't. That's not what it's about to me. I'm not going to get rich playing fantasy football. I told my wife, I said, hey, my goal is that I'll make enough money to pay for all my leagues and maybe we can go on a little trip somewhere. That's it. I'm not going to get rich. I'm not going to pay my mortgage, anything like that. It's fun. It's entertainment. That's what I see that I'm getting out of this when I do it. I'm paying, when my entry fee, I'm paying for a year's worth of entertainment. That's what it is. That's how I see it. Now, the idea is to not have to pay that $50, $100, whatever, every year. It's a lot better when you don't have to pay for that. So I play fantasy football for the camaraderie, for the competition. I don't care necessarily how much the purse is. I care about the competition that I competed against and hopefully had some success against.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same. You know, the camaraderie and the competition are kind of what keep me coming back. I've given up a few leagues over the last several years, some of which were tough to give up, others not so much. And part of that is, competition in all the leagues I've been in for the last 5 to 7 years has always been steep. It's tough to win the leagues that I'm in. I know it's tough to win the leagues you're in, but some of them just, it was easier to walk away from if I didn't feel that camaraderie, or if some of the league settings weren't interesting. And I think a big part of that is I just really got into auction style drafts, and the amount of freedom that you end up having just spoils you. It's so hard to go back to snake drafts after all of this. In fact, I tweeted this out. Now, it's probably been a few months at this point, about how I had some interest in doing a standard drafting dynasty league again, with the one twist being you start off where you auction every single pick to begin. So maybe each owner has $1,000 and you have to auction off. We play in IDP leagues typically, so 50 or 60 picks for each team. So you buy them and then you draft from there. Like, I'm so into the auction style now that even a standard draft, I have to figure out a way to do some kind of messed up auction with it. It's just kind of in my blood now.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. It would take a real commitment, though, because...
And a bunch of psychopaths.
That's right. They would have to be hardcore degenerates that really bought into what it was. And that's such a crucial thing about putting the right league together, is having a good group of owners. It doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is type A personalities or is this or that. You have to have ebbs and flows and gives and takes and a little bit of rivalry and a little bit of shit talk and a little bit of patting each other on the back. But the commish is always key. The commish is the quarterback. The commish is the one that's got to call the plays. He's got to, you know, stand tall when it gets kind of rough. He's got to make the tough decisions. And one thing that I think the best commissions do, and that's what really showcases them, is you said it, they find a way to make their leagues fun. And it's taken time out of their day. It's, you know, it's a thankless job oftentimes, but little things like making a newsletter for your league or, something fun just to maybe after you, one thing I've done and seen in a few leagues is after you do a startup draft, you kind of bring in a guest referee, if you will, a guest judge, somebody that's kind of from the community or in the industry. And you would ask them, hey, take a look at all these teams and maybe kind of write us up a page of the summary of the auction as you see it and who did what and what you see and blah, blah, blah. And, you know... the truth is, when we've done that in the past, I think we threw the guy, you know, 10 or 20 bucks or something kind of thing, right? Like, all the owners said, okay, I'm willing to pitch $2 and give this guy, this well-known writer, a little bit of money, and he can take a look at all our rosters and the scoring and use his educated eye and write something up on the league. And it's a lot of fun. It gives you something to talk about. It's early bragging rights. It's the first win of the year. That kind of fun is what makes people interested, in my opinion, all year long.
I'm totally on board with you on that. Actually, some of my first experiences doing some fantasy writing were the exact same things you're talking about. I did them with my own leagues, though. And, of course, when it's your own leagues, you get an A-plus grade after the draft. And you know, your best friend gets an F. And the random dude that you haven't seen since high school, you're like, ah, you know, whatever, I'll throw this guy a bone, B+. It just ends up kickstarting all the shit talking. And that's kind of how I started mine. But yeah, I love that stuff. Just getting more people involved and upping the level of fun, just kind of introducing a little bit of that shit talk. That's some of the stuff that I love in fantasy. And honestly, the guys that we play in leagues with, that's kind of a given. If you're not ready to, you know, throw some jabs at your competitors, then you're probably not in the leagues that we're in. It's just par for the course.
Yeah, that's a big part to me is I always call things like I see it. You know, I think I call it straight down the middle, but I always call it like I see it. And some people, believe it or not, they take that as being aggressive or abrasive. I don't know where they get it. But to me, you know, there's nothing wrong with jumping on your boards after a trade and giving a guy a little rub or whatever. Now, that being said, if you go on the board and say, you're a fucking idiot, why would you do something like that? Well, that's not necessarily a friendly rub. That's more a harsh jab. And that's probably not going to get you a future trade with that person. So I wouldn't recommend doing something like that. But you can go on the boards and say, oh, that was a big deal. I think somebody got a little better of it. You're not saying who, but that might allow you to now make a trade with the guy that you think just gave away a gem. And maybe you can get a piece of that action as well.
Yeah, exactly. You can kind of look at that as, so it's getting close to gardening season where my wife and I live. So that's a little bit of tilling the soil, maybe, you know, getting people riled up. Because, you know, each owner involved in something like that is going to look at it and be like, wait, is he talking shit to me? Or is he saying that other guy's an idiot?
Exactly. So, and don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with messaging the guy that you think just got fleeced and saying, hey, nice trade, I think you did well, what kind of trade can you and I make now? All's fair in love and war and fantasy football.
Yeah, I definitely have never messaged you about a trade that's gone down, that's for sure. Never happened, not even once. Let's talk about some general auction stuff that we think our listeners might want to know. A lot of this stuff is pretty basic if you've been in auction formatted leagues before, but some of it's kind of also those things that if you don't ever say it, you forget. And, you know, the basic knowledge that you end up losing. I mean, just think about back to high school, all the things you learned that if you don't apply it, you completely forget it. And so one of the things we want to talk about tonight as we just kind of delve into the very introductory parts of what this podcast is some of the auction things that we think our listeners might want to know. And if you're used to the auction formats, you've worked with these kind of ideas before. But as you probably know, when you look back at what you learned in high school, if you don't use the things that you've learned on a daily basis, sometimes you just lose them. So these are just kind of some basic things we want to talk about. And one of those things that I really want to bring to the forefront is how tiers in auctions can be so vastly different from those in standard drafts. You know, if you look at the at an auction draft once it's done and just kind of put everything in order by the amount of dollars spent on players, and then you factor that against a standard draft, those tiers can just be vastly different. Charlie, what do you think?
Yeah, there's the thing about an auction draft is it is experience. That's the only way to get better at them, to get more comfortable at them, is through experience. You have to know the ebbs and flows of an auction. That being said, even guys that have experience, they get in certain situations and it can take them off their game. They can go in with a plan or they can go in having knowledge and experience, but in certain situations, you know, they forget, they make mistakes. I can say it's something, it's a league we'll talk about, I'm sure, from time to time, but in the recent Pigs 3 auction we did, we were with real tough crowd, some of the best out there, and I was a little gun shy, which isn't usually a thing for me. I usually hit my budgets kind of right on, and I don't leave a lot of meat on the bone, so to speak. And that auction I did, I was a little gun shy, and I finished with more cash and less talent than I would have preferred. So even, you know, even the best and even people that are really confident in what they do and how they do it, you get in some big leagues sometimes, and it's tough. It's tough from start to finish.
Yeah, actually, if you want to talk about pigs, oh man, I know we were talking about it on Voxer just the other day. I definitely left that auction feeling like if I did one or two things right between that auction and the rookie auction, that I was going to be in a really good situation. And what has ended up happening in the month or so since, maybe 2 months now, is my team has done nothing. Absolutely nothing. And by doing nothing, it has gotten worse. Because so many of the owners have made big moves. And I don't want to say I was gun shy, but I stuck to my original plan too much. And if I would have had a little bit of more flexibility, I may have been able to make some moves that would have benefited me. And now at this point, I don't have any moves that I think I can make until post-draft, where player values have, you know, their second or third adjustment of the offseason. I guess third at this point, since free agency is essentially over. And actually, speaking of free agency, off the cuff here, Dez Bryant, if you got to put your money on it, where's he ending up?
Well, I heard all the talk right away that he said he was coming back and he was going to play the Cowboys twice. So as everybody knows and everybody's talked about, it seems he really wants the NFC East. As everybody knows and everybody's talked about, Dez really doesn't have that much control over the situation. He'll play where whoever's going to give him a contract. There's a couple spots that I think are somewhat interesting for him that don't get that much play, really. So I think Carolina is interesting. I think Cam could use a weapon like Dez quite well. I think Cam's the type of big personality that could have somebody like Dez beside them in a way, because they're different. Cam's a big personality in his hats and his shoes and his look and his that way, where Dez is a big personality in his passion, his fire, his drive, if you will. And I think Cam had, you know, there's not a lot of weapons there in a lot of ways. Olsen's great. He's reliable, but he's just one piece. I'm a big Funchess fan, you know that. And I'd hate to see him lose a lot of red zone targets. But I think if Dez was there, even in a slot role, or primarily a slot role, he could pull some coverage, even if it's a safety or whatever, off of Funchess, and that'll only help him out. So Carolina could be interesting. A lot of people have said maybe Green Bay, kind of to replace Jordy. I don't know about that. I would actually love to see Green Bay draft my boy ESB. That would be beautiful. So
I think his name is actually ESB.
I don't think Dez goes to a place like that. I don't necessarily think he's going to go to the contender that we may hope he does. I think he might go somewhere where he kind of just gets the opportunity to play a bit.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to call you crazy, but I hadn't really given a ton of serious thought to Carolina, but it really makes a ton of sense. I've seen a lot of people talking about the possibility of it being the Giants, and that makes sense because he wants to really stick it to the Cowboys, but I think that would really involve Odell Beckham being sent elsewhere, and at this point, I really don't think that's a serious possibility. The team that I've been thinking makes a ton of sense is Baltimore. He walks in as the wide receiver one there. Flacco, for all of his faults, the one thing that he really does well is just chuck the football downfield with reckless abandon. And while that's not really Dez's primary, great, that's an interesting pronunciation of that word. While that's not Dez's primary skill set, he is good at using body position to kind of muscle smaller corners out of the way. And if they just adjust a little bit of Flacco's style to Dez's style, I think it would be an actually really good match. And even with the offseason signings there in Baltimore, none of those players get anywhere close to touching Dez's ability. I know he's not the player that he was a few years ago, but let's not get it twisted. It's not like he's a trash player. Dez Bryant is still a top 10 to 15 wide receiver in this league. He's not the dynasty 101 at this point, but that doesn't make him a bad player. And I think a lot of people are kind of writing him off as just kind of being gone. And that to me is maybe overblowing the situation a little bit. Just because things aren't working out in Dallas doesn't mean that he's a player that's done. I think he's 29 years old, maybe 30. While that's not a young man by NFL standards for elite level players, he could still have 4 to 5 years of productivity left.
Yeah, now something that I use in my study of players and how I view things, situations, the way I take my chances, is a lot to do with the mental game. Now, think back to Dez in those 3 seasons he had that were fantastic. Him and Romo were best buddies, right? They were joined at the hip. Everything was great. That being said, Romo got Dez killed on a handful of occasions. Like, you remember a couple of those hits Dez took in his back? Where, I mean, it was like he folded in half backwards. So
Dez has been murdered about 5 or 6 times in his life.
That's right. He took some major punishment from some of those Romo throws. But that being said, he put up great numbers. They had a good chemistry. Everything was rolling. So now things majorly changed in Dallas. Dak came in and they basically treated Romo like shit once Dak got there. That's the truth. And you know that him and Dez were boys. So Dez can't like seeing his best guy kind of get run down. He got, if I recall, didn't Romo kind of get screwed over by the Cowboys in the same way Dez did, in that they kind of released him later than they should have, so he didn't get to more or less participate in free agency? So the Cowboys didn't do Romo any favors that way either. And then they turned around and they do the same thing to Dez. They could have cut Dez 2 months ago and he could have had a better shot in free agency, but they kept him right till the end and he basically loses that window. So to me, that's not doing right by your players. So I think Dez saw Romo get basically run down by the organization. They bring in Dak, they make him the man. And I bet Dak and Dez didn't really jive that well. So I think Dez's heart's been out of it. You know, he doesn't want to muscle through those beatings anymore. He doesn't want to fight for the ball anymore. So I think if he got a new start, it would be the chance for him to get some fire back and get some of that passion back. I know he wants to play the Cowboys twice, but I think just in a new environment, with some, you know, a new home that appreciates him, he would get that fire back, and I think we would see a lot of the Dez that put up those 3 great seasons.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point here with what the Cowboys have done to some of their biggest, best players over the last several years. They did Tony a little dirty there, yeah. And I'll freely admit, there was a while where I kind of bought into the Tony Romo isn't clutch kind of thing. But as I softened on that, what it really came down to is the defense put Romo in an awful situation nearly every week. And then the Cowboys just kind of moved on from him with no plan. You know, I can't fault them for not going away from the hot hand with Dak his rookie year as he kind of developed. But they did a lot of mishandling with the whole Romo situation. And I agree, they did the same thing with Dez here. If they would have cut him a month ago, 2 months ago, Dez probably gets signed for $10 million a year.
Sure, why not?
To another team. Yeah. I mean, he's a quality NFL receiver. He has good hands. He runs a limited route tree, but what the routes that he runs, he's one of the better players in the league at it. And actually, for a real throwback, and honestly, I don't even know if you'll remember this, Charlie. I know for sure that we weren't really connected on Twitter at the time, but you may or may not have seen some of this. When I lived down in Nashville, Tennessee, a few years back, I had a roommate who was a Cowboys fan. And so when I would talk about his pure lunacy fandom on Twitter, I would hashtag roommate Cowboys fan. And if anybody remembers that, let us know, because some of the things that he would say to me were absolutely Jerry Jones level ridiculous.
Jared Jones.
Yeah, some of that stuff. Oh my gosh. It really takes me back. That was a really mediocre time in my life.
Well, another spot that I think has a lot of interest, and it didn't pop in my head. I saw it, and it kind of made me go, wow, I like that, is the Houston Texans. Now, they don't have a tight end, even though Bill O'Brien generally likes tight ends and stuff. They don't have one. I don't think they're going to draft one and get a productive one in this draft class. Clearly, there's not one to trade for or a decent free agent anymore. So I could see Houston looking real nice, running some packages with Fuller and Nuke on the outside and Dez in the slot. I mean, you got Nuke and Fuller taking the tops off of the defense, and Dez with everything under the middle. He can sit in the zones, and he's a red zone weapon where Fuller isn't, so he helps the team that way. And the great thing about that for Dez is he would stay in Texas, which would be a way to stick it to the Cowboys, because if Houston has a better season than Dallas, which they very well could or should this year, that's sticking it to Dallas too, because now Dez is playing on the winning team, the best team in Texas. So that's a fit I like as well.
Gosh, as much as I want to shit on that, because I love Fuller so much, it makes about as much sense as any other destination does for him.
I don't think Dez hurts Fuller, because he's not going to eat into the way Fuller eats, because Fuller eats on those big plays, right? When Fuller catches a touchdown, it's 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 yards, and he's going to keep getting those, and that's where you want Fuller to make his hay. But Fuller's probably never really going to be a red zone weapon, because he makes his hay on the speed. He's not really a body guy, and his hands aren't the strongest. So Dez can eat that way. You know, if Fuller doesn't make the 50-yard touchdown, he got the 50-yard reception and pulled out at the 2. Dez can pick up 6 points on the touchdown. Everybody wins.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about Fuller's hands. He's one of those guys that, you know, you can toss him a football real gently from about 8 yards away, and it's going to hit him in the pads, and he's going to drop it. But you throw him some of that Odell Beckham highlight shit, and he's going to catch it. And that's the way it's been since he was back in college at Notre Dame. Probably a big part of why I love him is because I grew up so close to Notre Dame. But that's just kind of the player he is. And you're right, he's not a red zone guy. And I don't know. Nuke is my 101 in Dynasty, and Fuller I have as a top 24 receiver, hashtag hot take with that one. Dez he'd have to bring those numbers down a little bit, but maybe we'd just get lucky and Deshaun Watson would be able to play up to those levels if his knees are able to function well enough. I certainly hope they are. I think I have him as maybe my QB 5 or 6 right now. If he's healthy, he breaks into the top 4. But we have been on this Dez tangent for probably 10 minutes now, and I love it. I think we got into some good stuff. But let's steer it back to some of that general auction stuff just real quick so we can end this episode sub 50 minutes. We'll see if that happens. When Charlie and I get ourselves together, we end up chit-chatting quite a bit. One of the things that I want to mention or bring up for discussion about the differences between standard drafts and auctions is the exorbitant prices that most elite players go for, and that's across all positions, but especially if you look at your Dynasty ADP for the top 12 to 20 players. If you kind of do a little regression on prices, you're going to see that those top 12 to 20 players essentially make up the first 3 to 4 rounds worth of money if you're trying to kind of have a gentle slope. And that's a big thing when it comes to your auction strategy. You know, there's two ways you can kind of, well, there are many ways you can go into a draft, but if you're breaking it down into a specific kind of styles, you're either a big money spender on elite players, or you look for the next couple tiers and you try to stock up on players that way. And auctions are pretty unique in that regard. Charlie, what do you think of the way the elite players have such a high percentage of auction dollars spent on them? Are there ways you can navigate that depending on your drafting style?
Yeah, there's, like you said, there's infinite ways to walk into an auction draft. But essentially, they always come into a couple main categories. You're going to go some form of boom bust, you're going to go some form of value based, or you're going to go conservative. Now, with it's always dictated, in my opinion, by your scoring system and your starting requirements. This is what's going to put a premium on certain players. So as soon as a premium goes on a position, it's usually going to dictate its price. And from that point, you need to decide how risky you want to get with it, how conservative you want to be, and if you necessarily have a backup plan if you don't want to wade into those expensive waters. You don't have to go after the high expensive talent if you don't want to. But if you're not going to do that, if you're going to steer away from the higher priced talent, you need to have another plan onto how you're going to fill out your roster and manage that. So I like to look at a dollar per point basis is how I do a lot of my drafting. So this bases a lot of tier work and a lot of value based on prices. So based on this, I generally don't go for a boom bust strategy. I'll honestly stick away from that more often than not.
Yeah, I'm similar to you in that regard. I think I'm sure that you've noticed from being in auction drafts with me in the Pigs Leagues and the Bullhorn Leagues, is I really appreciate depth. And that's to a fault. Sometimes, you know, especially in the Pigs Leagues, you need a really good starting lineup. And as much as I tried to reprogram my brain in Pigs 3, I still ended up with one of those teams that just has just depth for days. And, you know, that wasn't the strategy that I wanted to go with, but it's just kind of what's in my drafting DNA at this point. And one of the ways that I think that owners can kind of, I don't know, find a balance, maybe is what I want to say, is when you come up with your budget, which is something that all owners should do when they go into an auction. It needs to be flexible, but you need to start with a budget, and we'll actually probably do an episode about that. Is you need to come up with your budget and you need to know, am I going for X amount of elite players, or am I going for specific positions where I'm elite, or am I going to spend the most on my starting lineup, or things of this nature? These are things you need to think about as you go into an auction draft. And then you have to be able to pivot. And that's one of those words that outside of basketball, I feel like only the degenerates really use when talking about sports, because pivots, either, you know, you're using your foot to pivot in basketball, or you realize that your strategy going into a draft, especially an auction, is totally fucked and it's time to pivot to a new idea. And that's actually something I used in the Bullhorn 2QB League. I always go in thinking, you know what, let's win this league year one. And I started auctioning, and it turned out that I was way too soft in the quarterback position and knew that I was just not going to be able to make it. And then our boy Josh ended up winning that league with, I think, Jacoby Brissett as his only quarterback.
Yeah.
and I'm still real salty about it.
That was a unicorn. We got to see a unicorn in that league. You'll never see something like that again. And that league, just for the listeners, it was a 2QB league that we did last year. And it was a perfect storm that you had a lot of the really good owners. That's, you know, maybe a bit bold, but the owners that I thought were the stronger owners all happened to decide to punt in one degree or another out of that startup draft. So that kind of changed the dynamic of the league in that it took a lot of the competition out of the first year, in my opinion. So while the Josh, who won the league, had a very strong team in a lot of positions, he did slide through a 2QB league with essentially Jacoby Brissett and nothing else. So that was an interesting thing. But I think you made a very good point earlier, Zach, when you said about pivoting and being fluid. And that's, I think you're right. We both made a mistake there in the Pigs auction in that we weren't fluid enough. We were too strict to our plans. And that's not to say that our plans were wrong or bad, but we should have pivoted. And honestly, because it's a Pigs league, we should have had an NBA three pivot foot pivot. And we should have noticed a little bit where we could have picked up some value on a few players in certain stages. And that's what I feel we missed. So maybe it's not gun shy. It's just not being fluid and making an adjustment when we needed to. And we should have noticed it. But that's part of the fun. And that's a good lesson to learn right there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And for the listeners who aren't familiar with Pigs, first of all, why do you not know Scott Fish, who is a god in the fantasy community? Follow him at ScottFish24, I think. You are most definitely following him already if somehow you stumbled upon this podcast. If you haven't, you need to be involved in that man's life, because he is, if you're looking for the fantasy trinity, he is most definitely in that. Anyway, the Pigs leagues are a Superflex dynasty league with four 14 teams divisions in them. So 56 total teams, four player copies. All of the divisions are mixed for the auction. So basically what it comes down to is you have 56 guys banging their heads, guys and gals. Let's be inclusive here. Come on. I know. Me with my gender specific terms. My bad.
It's only Julie, I believe. You have 56 competitor.
Yeah, she really is. And fact, she's probably one of the five or six most active owners in this league as well. But it ends up being 56 people banging their heads against a wall trying to figure out how they're going to beat out the other 55. And I gotta be honest, as much as I try to come up with some insane league settings, that startup auction was one of the tougher ones I've ever been in. And to be quite honest, throughout most of it, I felt like I was performing my strategy pretty well. Got to the end of it, thought, oh yeah, I'm going to make a couple moves. It's going to be real great. Yeah. And then just realized those moves aren't quite as easy as I thought they were. I still think you and I both have teams that we can work with there. And actually, if you want to see our teams in this league, since we're most likely going to talk about it quite a bit, we are more than willing to share them on Twitter. We'll send out all the links that you could want, all the screenshots you could want, because one of the things that I really feel is important is we have a saying in the Dynasty Fantasy Football community that says process over results. And while I will always respect a good process, when it comes to me, your results are important. And if your results are a result of bad luck, that's one thing. If it's a result of players getting into trouble or getting injured, that's one thing. But if your results are a result of you having bad process, then it really just kind of puts your whole process in perspective. So I will always say for myself, if I don't put out good results and don't have a damn good reason why I didn't, then maybe I just don't have a good process. And I'll also freely admit, I shoot from the hip a lot, so my process may or may not be pretty flawed in some of those ways. Let's go ahead and steer this back towards some of our exorbitant prices. Let's take a minute and talk about some of the older players in the league. You know, the Larry Fitzgeralds, some of the more senior players, the ones that might win you a redraft league, but they're not the players that you really want to look at in Dynasty. I've found, and Charlie, you could confirm or deny this as a fact, but I've found that a lot of the older players, if you just, after an auction, sort for dollar value, highest to lowest, and then you put that next to ADP, players like Larry Fitzgerald, a few years ago, Antonio Gates, players of that nature that are still putting up numbers, but they're a little bit more senior, in auctions, I found that typically they are had for far cheaper than they are in a standard draft league. And that's an opportunity for owners if you want to win early, or if you're going for a balanced approach with the potential to push for a year one win. Charlie, what do you think about that, and what are some of your strategies around
it? Yeah, you raise a good point there, and you're absolutely right. I can attest that it's a strategy I've seen you use and have success with. A common theme between your Bullhorn and Superflex teams were they had a good balance of veterans on them, high-producing veterans. Now, they can be real gems in an auction draft if it fits with your overall strategy of your team. Now, this is a big reason why I find they are generally the value they are, because they get to a point where there's only a certain number of teams that become interested in them. And generally, I'm not one of those teams. Now, the way that I generally work would be in a situation like that, you're going to be coming to the point in the auction where you're going to have someone like Larry Fitzgerald on the board and someone like, say, Chris Godwin, for example. So now you're looking at Larry Fitzgerald and Chris Godwin both on the board at roughly the same price. Now, obviously, Larry Fitz is going to outscore Godwin probably for another year or so. So if you're in a position where your team has a nice balance, it's going to produce now, and you can pick up those kind of numbers for that price, that's a great value to your team. If your team is designed the other way and you're already youth driven, Larry Fitzgerald is not going to be worth the $11 to you because you don't need his points this year. That's not what your goal is. Your goal is to use those couple dollars that he costs to purchase an asset that's going to be ascending in value. So it's very team dependent on whether you want those kind of players or not. And that's a big reason that they can be had for the value they are.
Yeah, I completely agree. You make really solid points there. It's extremely important to look at your roster as you move through an auction draft and know, am I likely to compete year one or year two, or am I really kind of setting myself up for the future? And you're going to hear this word a lot on this podcast, but are you punting? And if you're punting, you really need to make sure that you're going for a solid Pat McAfee type of punt. I mean, you got to use that boomstick. You're not going to try and just kind of kick a little 45-yard punt through the air with, you know, a 4-second airtime on that. Like, you need to punt. Or do you have a team that has the potential to compete? And maybe Larry Fitzgerald is more valuable to you than a Chris Godwin type. So that's one of those things that is a little bit different in auctions than it is standard drafts. You have, in both, you have to kind of evaluate your roster as you go through and make adjustments. But in auctions, it's a hell of a lot more tangible. In a standard draft, you might come to round, honestly, I don't know where Larry Fitzgerald or Chris Godwin are going in ADP right now, so I'm going to go ahead and fudge it and say you're in round 8. Both of them are available at your pick. You might have a team right now that is ready to push for a fantasy championship, and unless you're a crazy person, at that point in time, you're taking Larry Fitzgerald in the 8th. But you might have gone very youth-centric, and you have to go for Chris Godwin to make the best opportunity for your team long-term. When it comes to an auction draft, you are making those decisions 8, 10, 12 times a day. It's not just at a pick. You are making that as you make your bids. You are making those decisions as you even forecast the bids that are on the board that might have 18 hours versus the player that you have already secured at 12 hours. You know, if you get overbid on a player, you might have to make that decision at a split second as you redline somebody and ruin their weekend. And these are very complex decisions that you have to make multiple times in an auction draft, multiple times per day even, and they're a big part of the reason that people like Charlie and I have gone on to really love the auction format.
Well, it's interesting, the players I happen to pick, I pulled up their ADP, and Chris Godwin has a current ADP of 86. And Larry Fitz is 96. So they're only a round apart, and you're dealing with basically, what, the 8th round. So they're actually pretty close.
That was a really good guess by me, if I have to say so myself. Yeah, that's not too bad.
So that's a case where it comes down to what type of player are you? Hopefully you set out a plan at the start of the auction, and you're not just bouncing around like a monkey with his nuts in his hand. You've got a plan, and you know what you're doing. And when that happens, when you're following your plan, you know which one of those guys is the guy that's worth the $10 bid. So knowing that, knowing the construction of your team and where you're going is what allows you to decide what's the best value for your team and for where you're going. Punt, you're right. That's something you're going to hear on this podcast a lot. And I think we need to preface that for a lot of people because it's become somewhat of a generic term. And I think some people misuse the term. I think some people kind of have a bad connotation of the term. To me, a punt should be a very calculated move. And that move is based on working towards a future goal. And that future goal is acquiring certain pieces of value you feel are all going to rise in value that you couldn't acquire a year from now. So the idea is to acquire all those pieces now before they rise in value. That's what a punt is. Now you can take it to whatever level you want, and maybe that's the part where people get a little bit confused. Some people, they do real extreme punts, and I question why they do it and if they have the best intentions. If you're punting 3-4 years out, you have to be very committed to that league. You have to be very committed to your abilities at trading, and you have to be very committed to your player evaluations, because you're taking a lot of risk when you invest in players that are that far out.
Yeah, and actually, you talk about punting 3 or 4 or 5 years out, and at one point in time, I feel like that was kind of used as a derogatory term for the UTH way. And as they've softened their approach a little bit, and as the Dynasty community has done a better job at looking at different styles of building rosters, I feel like the long punt, or the long con, as your one team name is, has become a more viable approach. I will likely always push a little bit more towards an early win, and that is probably equally to maybe my success and also my detriment, where I am in my drafting style that kind of suits me. You know, we're going to get into this as this podcast goes on. There are a plethora, an absolute multitude of different ways to draft a team through auction. And that doesn't just stop at the startup. It's the rookie auction, if you're playing in a contract or salary league, the restricted free agents, the unrestricted free agents, you know, throwing in IDP and Devy changes all of that. But the one thing I feel like we can really take from all of these different types of leagues is kind of the last thing that we had on our notes. And that's when you come down to the auction style format, ADP means little. And that's mainly because, in my opinion, when you build an ADP, the way that you get your top and your bottom number or draft slot is because you find the highest and the lowest person on that particular player in any given draft. And when you come to an auction league, you are going to have an owner in that league who is going to be the highest on that player, and they will push that player's value as high as they need to in order to take them. And that is going to, in turn, greatly affect the trade value of said player and going to affect what happens with that player for possibly multiple years. And that's something that you really need to take into account when jumping into an auction league. And it's going to be something that we talk about throughout this offseason after the NFL draft and into real rookie draft season and beyond. It's going to be a theme that will really just perpetuate throughout the entirety of this podcast. And our goal is to really keep this podcast going on, and hopefully you've enjoyed it. At this point, I have lost Charlie. He has, it appears he's lost his connection. So our goal at the end of this was to answer just a few questions from who we hope have become listeners. We tweeted out a few questions, or actually we just tweeted out asking for questions, and our goal is to answer those. However, I don't feel like I should answer them on my own. Charlie will jump in on a future episode. And what we have coming up is we have a rookie auction primer potentially coming out pre-draft. That's going to kind of depend on our podcast hosting sites. Hopefully we can get this one out to you really soon. This is finishing up at 1 a.m. Eastern on April 22nd, so it is going to be pushing it to get it out in time. We will talk about some of the rookies coming in very soon, and possibly maybe even a draft night primer for you, but no promises here. So thank you so much for tuning in to the first Auctionable Offense, and hopefully you have enjoyed us. If you did, please follow us on Twitter at Auctionable Offense. I am Zach Bonner at Bonner FFETT on Twitter, and for my co-host Charlie Parker at Cool Hand CP3. Thank you so much for jumping in, and we will see you soon.